No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the newest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sroot. I'm from CardsWire.com, USA Today Sports Media Group's NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Apparently, well, here, recording on a Tuesday night, so apparently back east, we're back central, I guess, and on the Illinois, Seth's been on tornado watch this afternoon, apparently, right?
Yeah, tornado watch, first one out here. Came home, hunkered down, watched a movie, and just listened to the rain and the thunder. So it was a calm night, but it's always fun. I had to warn Jess just in case that the tornado decided to hit here. I had to warn Jess that just in case I may not be able to podcast tonight, but no, Mother Nature allowed this to happen still.
And we are glad for it because this is our free agency preview, our Arizona Cardinal free agency preview episode, and we're going to talk about, well, free agency. The Cardinals have made a couple of moves. This is also officially the start of the NFL Combine, although the drills have not yet begun. So Seth and Justin Hignett, his co-host, they happen to have recorded. They did one show last week. They recorded one so far this week, kind of previewing the Combine. And this was kind of a fun one because it was about the prop bets. I mean, apparently you can gamble on the Combine and the results of the drills anywhere from 40 times, record times, to Wonderlic scores. And I don't know how you verify that, as you guys were talking on the show. How in the world do you verify this if that's not supposed to be, information that the public finds out?
Right. Not only that, but how do you know if these guys are smart? And, that's the other thing. Like, again, we knew Ryan Fitzpatrick was smart. He went to Harvard. But outside of that, like, a lot of athletes get into schools that they're not exactly, that they shouldn't exactly be going to because they're great athletes, So you can make the call that Deshaun Kizer got into Notre Dame and he's been eligible the entire time he's there. So, therefore he should do a good job on the Wonderlic test, but we've never had a conversation with Deshaun Kizer, so I don't know. Maybe he's not smart.
Quarterbacks are supposed to be smart. I remember way back in 2011 when Patrick Peterson's supposed Wonderlic score was an issue because it was not good, at least what came out. What was like a, I want to say it was a 12, but I'm just remembering that, but that hasn't stopped him from being, all pro cornerback, pretty dang good, one of the best in the game. But, and that's the thing, because when you talk to him, he doesn't sound like a dumb guy. He sounds like a well-spoken, intelligent man. And yet his Wonderlic score was a concern, apparently. But anyway.
Well, that's why the Wonderlic's silly anyways. So.
But like you said, anyone, how dare they let it out? Hey, I got a high score, but that's, who cares?
Exactly.
I took it and got a 50. So yeah, but why would anyone let those scores out? So if you're interesting, it's actually quite interesting because Justin and Seth go through and talk about some of the 40 times, what they're expecting out in verticals. And Justin also gave you some really good information about, if you don't follow college sport, I mean, he went all the way back to how some of these players tested entering college, what their 40 time was coming out of high school, and kind of talking historically, you just don't see huge gains necessarily in these athletic testing, especially when they change their body type. So that's actually already out. So you can find that on SoundCloud or on NFLDraftBreakdown.com. But we're going to talk tonight about the Cardinals. Last time we talked about specifically their needs. We talked about their free agent needs. We talked about Jay Cutler. Apparently Jay Cutler came up and he's drawn the ire of all sorts of Cardinals fans everywhere in media saying, well, there's no interest there and why in the world would they have interest? We won't talk about that because we already made our case last week. We both think it'd be a good idea if and only if he came as a backup. Heck, why not? But the Cardinals made three roster moves. They announced three moves this week. One is the expected move of Chandler Jones receiving the franchise tag, the non-exclusive, meaning that he can negotiate with other teams. And the Cardinals will have the right to either match said offer sheet or decline it and then get that team's next two first-round picks as compensation. As a result, what that means is that they were unable to agree to a long-term deal, which was expected, and they got till July to negotiate. Otherwise, he will play this year under about a $15.3 million is what is expected to be. And apparently, John Clayton had that number wrong because I know on his expected contract he says $17 million. I had to step back and I remember that's the defensive line, that's the defensive end franchise. And so Cardinals saved themselves a couple of million by calling him an outside linebacker because they're in a 3-4 defense.
Yeah, and I think, and I could be wrong. I'll have to go back and look. I should have looked before, but I think the Cardinals, if for some reason a team signs Chandler Jones and they don't match the contract, I think they get to pick the first.
Oh, is that how that goes?
The years they want. So I think that's how it goes. So they can get like the 18 and 19 or like the 18 and 20. I think that's how it goes. I'd have to look, but yeah, I mean, we said all along it was going to cost them $15 million a year, whether it was short-term, long-term, or no-term. Like, it's a $15 million a year proposition. They got to figure out if they want to pay it. And quite frankly, it makes sense. It makes sense twofold. And I think we'll know more about their intentions come draft day, but it makes sense because it allows them to decide long-term on Chandler Jones, but it also allows them, if 17 truly is the final year for Palmer and Fitzgerald, it allows them to move on from Jones as well and kind of rid themselves of all big contracts outside of Patrick Peterson. And starting fresh may sound bad, but, you know, kind of retool from the way that, you know, a new team where you don't have to pay big money to an outside linebacker. You'll see the progress of Marcus Golden. Maybe you can sign him for 10, 11 million a year as opposed to 15, 16 million a year. So, it made sense as long as, you know, Jones was going to play under the franchise tag, which a player will do. I mean, like, honestly,
who's going to turn down $15 million guaranteed?
Right. Exactly. So, overall, I mean, it's not a surprise, but it is. You just didn't hear much about them negotiating, right? Like there was never talks. Like, we've already heard. I mean, obviously Eric Berry signed, but we heard about Eric Berry. We heard even about Kirk Cousins and how bad they botched it. I mean, we at least heard from those teams. We didn't really hear much about the Cardinals and Chandler Jones specifically.
And I think that is that if we go back to the last two, three seasons with Steve Keim, is that They've been really good about keeping things buttoned down. Steve Keim is adamant about not negotiating through the media, and he probably has that. I imagine he probably lays the line, kind of lays down the law for agents as well when they start negotiations that this does not go out. So you don't discuss it at all. Because it seems like with Tyrann Mathieu's contract, that one we at least heard a little bit about, but Patrick Peterson's extension, we really didn't. I mean, we knew it was, there was stuff going on in the works, but it happened like the first information we got on almost any of these deals was like a day or two before it was done. And I think that just kind of points to how Steve Keim does things. I mean, obviously there's some negotiations happening. And Steve Keim has come out and said that there are, he sort of implied the idea that there are players who want to test the market. And we've heard this through other sources as well, at least here locally, that these, you know, Calais Campbell, for one, is on the way John Gambadoro put it on Arizona Sports, is that the Cardinals and Calais Campbell are on different planets. Calais is looking for a big payday, it sounds like. And they're on different planets. And that's the kind of thing with Tony Jefferson, too.
Right. And you and I have talked about this 100 times, but we're going to say it every time. We'll never begrudge a player from going to get paid because
never.
Look at, for instance, Darrell Revis. Best corner in the NFL for what, 4 or 5 seasons? And he signed a huge contract just last year with the New York Jets, and now he's out of a job again. Like, it comes and goes quick. So go get paid as much as you can, as fast as you can, and then, you know, if you want to sacrifice and win a ring, that's great. But, you know, this sounds awful, but rings don't keep a roof over your head and all of that good stuff. Like, you still have to be able to.
They don't feed the kids.
Right.
Rings don't feed the kids.
So,
I mean, there are things that come with that, but no, get the money.
Yeah, right. And people might say, oh, well, you know, he's made, the Cardinals have paid him handsomely over his career. He should take less money to go, you know, do his job. Okay, well, that's great. But, you know, even if you, and I know athlete salaries are such on a different spectrum from personal salaries, but, you know, would you stay at your job if they told you, oh, we're going to make you take, you know, 50% less? Like, no, you would go look for another job. Like, that's – and everybody would expect you to.
Right.
So it's just one of those things. Like, I would love Calais to be here. I Calais is one of those guys that is never going to be a Hall of Famer, but you would love to see him as an Arizona Cardinals Ring of Honor, and not just because, you know, he deserves it based on his tenure while he's been here, but because he spent his entire career here, that he walked off the field as an Arizona Cardinal, not a one-day contract that they're going to do in 3 years or 2 years when he finally retires. Like, you know, you would like to see him just stay and then go as a Cardinal. But again, it's a business, so that's the bad part of the business.
And so that's, we've got that, get the franchise tag, it's gonna make 15 million, 15.2, 15.3, and at least with Jones, I'm seeing this. The Cardinals, I think, are pretty firm on a price tag. I'm imagining Jones's camp is saying, give me Olivier Vernon money. Give me Von Miller type money. After all, he does have a couple of really good stats. Is what, one of like three players to have double digit sacks each of the last two or three seasons. That's, you know, he's in rare company, including Von Miller. The Cardinals don't want to pay more than a certain amount, and as long as they've got the franchise tag, why would they? And Jones probably wants more than that, because if 15 million, if you average 15 million a year, that's still a bargain. That's actually giving up money if you're Chandler Jones, a future, if you negotiated 5 years, 5 years, 75, or even 6 years and 90, you're actually giving up money based on the contracts that are out there. So it'll be, you know, I think they're going to play with that another year and see what happens. And maybe we'll see them, you know, there's the possibility, and I haven't written about it, but we've kind of alluded to it, to the possibility, you know, they could potentially bring in an edge guy, pass rusher, you know, like a Derek Barnett or Tim Williams, who could
13, and that would,
at
and that
13.
Would, and that would, honestly, that's how great teams operate. Not good teams, great teams, is that you do still have those top players, the Patrick Petersons, you know, in his prime, but you are able to assimilate others into the fold and have them make impact on rookie deals and then let them go get paid elsewhere and bring in others. You look at the Patriots, you know, the Patriots are famous for doing it with other people's first round picks. Shea McClellan, Jabal Sherd was a second round pick, you know, guys that they get at a discounted rate because other teams don't know how to use players. But it's still the same process.
And the Cardinals made a pair of other moves, very understated moves. One was reported over the weekend, and that's the re-signing of receiver Jeremy Ross. The report said return specialist, even though he didn't return a single kick or punt for the Cardinals. Jeremy Ross, who signed on with the Cardinals after they released Michael Floyd, he actually got a start against Los Angeles, against the Rams, had four catches and a touchdown. So he comes back. Potentially, he could be their answer at the return game because he can return both punts and kicks. And then they also re-signed Gabe Martin. They spent half the season on injured reserve, reserve inside linebacker, but more of an impact guy on special teams, one of the guys they really missed. Understated signings. Martin, I mean, we have to wait and see because he did suffer a knee injury, and that those can be kind of – those can turn teams on players quickly, but I'm sure it didn't really cost them any guaranteed money of any sort. Gabe Martin's back. We'll talk about the inside of linebacker positions because it's going to be kind of messy depending on what happens in free agency. But Jeremy Ross, I like the additions because they've just really been bad at returning, and they potentially get a guy who can handle both roles. Don't have to worry about Patrick Peterson returning punts. You don't have to worry about Andre Ellington returning kicks. And you still got J.G. Nelson who can do it, but if they want to increase his role on offense, they probably want to take him off of the return game since he's like 2 pounds, and you know, and Ross could be a nice depth, and I believe the Cardinals, especially Bruce Arians, are kind of the opinion that you can get receiver production from pretty much any receiver, right? Isn't that kind of the way how he goes?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, Justin and I were looking at this the other night when we were game planning for the shows this week and eating some Thai food. You look at the wide receivers that were top 10 in yards, and yardage is garbage stat. I know that. It's just a counting stat. But you look at the wide receivers that were top 10 in yardage, and it was like seven of the 10 were not first round picks. So, you can get production at the wide receiver position. Like, there's only so many Julio Jones, Odell Beckhams, you know, obviously Larry Fitzgerald. There are only so many of those guys. And draft a, for instance, you know, a Josh Doctson last year who didn't play at all for the Redskins or very little, you know, or a Laquon Treadwell who did nothing for the Vikings. When you draft those guys in the first round, you're hoping that you're going to get lifetime production in the vein of a wide receiver one. Whereas if you get a guy like Golden Tate in the second round, Tyler Lockett in the third round. You know, you're getting guys that can put up 700-800 yards on productive winning teams, and you don't, and you can, you know, go find other positions at a more premier spot. And so, you know, I think when it all comes down to that, that's what Bruce Arians has done throughout his career. I mean, the biggest bust I remember from the Arians, and I think he was just an OC at the time, was when they picked Limus Swede out of Texas when he was still with Pittsburgh.
He was just a receiver coach then. So he wasn't even OC back then.
So, I mean, that's been his worst, you know, tutorial of a player. You know, obviously you get upset or are unhappy with Michael Floyd, but I think that's more the player than the coach, because he didn't really do much in New England. I know it was only a handful of games, but so we'll see what happens.
So yeah, and Gabe Martin will be a nice addition. So yeah, the Jeremy Ross signing, one very understated, but he can contribute on special teams. He can catch a few passes. It'll be fun to see. So before we kind of dove right into some of the talk, what we're going to focus on for the rest of the show is the Cardinals and free agency. We've talked about the areas that we feel that they have needs. We didn't talk about last week. We talked about specific roles and positions. We didn't talk about who they should sign. We're going to talk about some targets, whether they need their own guys back or who could possibly be out there to sign. Who could they add? And that's what's coming up next on – and we're going to go offense and then defense. We're going to start with the offense. This is the free agency preview on Rise Up Sea Red. And this episode is brought to you by our friends over at Casper.com. If you are looking for a mattress, you know how expensive that can get. So one company, Casper, has a way of getting you mattresses, a perfect mattress just for you without the inflated prices of the mattress stores, of the bed stores. They've got engineers who have come up with the supportive memory foams. It's a perfect balance between sink and bounce without any risk. It's really affordable and it's super convenient. So not only do you get a deal, you don't have the super markup of the traditional mattress stores. You can try out this mattress 100 nights for free. They are for free delivery and free returns with 100-night home trial. And if you don't love it, they just pick it up and refund you everything. It's obsessively engineered with a shockingly fair price. Combined supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface. This is a mattress that has kind of caught the internet by storm. Since it's, you know, they've gotten over 20,000 reviews between Amazon and Google and their own sites' reviews. And they're out of 5 stars, they're averaging a 4.8. At my house, I mean, we've had one of those pricey memory foam mattresses for a lot of years. We got the Casper, and the night's sleep is great. I don't have any complaints. I sleep great. I've got some back issues, you know, then you don't care about that, but I don't wake up sore. I sleep well. It's comfortable. And I didn't spend anywhere near it. It costs a fraction of what I had to spend on the last mattress I paid 4 years ago. So here we have for you guys, our listeners, we have a deal for you. Casper is rewarding our Rise Up Sea Red listeners, and you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase. And the way to do it is you go to casper.com/Sea Red, and you use Sea Red as the code at checkout, and you're going to get $50 back. So do that. You get your 100 nights for free. You get it shipped to your house for free. It's not this big, bulky mattress that you have to have a hard time carrying. It's in a small box. You're going to wonder how they did it. So you get 100 nights for free. You get free shipping. You're going to have the best night's sleep of rest, the best night of sleep that you had in a long time. It's going to feel, it's got to have the right sink. It's going to have the right bounce. And you're going to get $50 off that mattress purchase. Again, go to casper.com/CRED and use CRED at checkout and you'll get that. And yeah, get it right now while the offer is still available. That's casper.com/CRED. We're going to talk about the offense side of the ball. We're talking about offense with the Arizona Cardinals. And as we talked about last week, kind of the areas of concern. We said the Cardinals need a backup running back. We said that they needed a starting caliber receiver. They need definitely the starting tight end. And they need an interior lineman. Where do you see the Cardinals as possibly... Who's out there? Who's out there at running back? I mean, obviously, we both have said before, Chris Johnson is a possibility. He came out and said on SiriusXM NFL Radio that while he has interest and the Cardinals have interest, he's primarily looking to find a place in the league. He wants to find a home in the league that's going to give him playing time.
Yeah, so you look at it, there's a couple interesting names. Brandon Bolden's a bigger back from New England that – it's not going to get a ton of money. I think he could, and he's been okay. Chandron, maybe from San Francisco. Tim Hightower wouldn't be bad to have back. I mean, he's done well in a
he has, and I, home. But I don't, I think, I don't know if he'd go anywhere else other than New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, no, I, yeah, exactly. Honestly,
you know, I wrote about it. I had there are four names that I put on the list that because this is a hard fit because I believe they need somebody who's kind of got some years in the league. In a perfect world, it would be a guy that's been a guy like Chris Johnson who's had really good years, who can be that guy in the locker room and say, hey, I've done this. I gave four names. Darren McFadden. I don't know if he's going to be price him, but he's already been a backup already. So he's had starter production. He's been a backup. I think he'd be a great backup as well for David Johnson if he's not going to go backup Ezekiel Elliott. I put the name out there, Travers Cadet from New Orleans. He's not much of a runner, but if you're looking for a guy who can do some of the same things that David Johnson can, you know, He had 40 receptions last year and had he actually beat Patrick Peterson on a busted play last year. He can do what Andre Ellington did, only he's bigger at 6'1", 210. Jaquiz Rogers, and I remember all the way back to his Oregon State days. You know, he's had success. Last year he ran for 560 yards, more than 4 yards a carry. He's caught more than 50 balls in a season twice. He's little. 5'7", 190. He's built small and thick. And then there's another guy who was briefly on the Cardinals roster. I put Fozzie Whitaker, backup for the Panthers. He, you know, Cardinals fans remember him in the playoff game too. That wasn't very pretty. So those are some names I said, you know, I think they would work. But again, they're going to have to go on the cheap. They're going to have to find someone on the cheap because they just don't have very much money. And we were talking this before the show. You know, $32 million in total cap space, they just burned 15 of that. And so of all these needs that we went over a week ago, they've got $17 million in cap space. And really, kind of $12 million because you want to have enough for your rookie group.
Yeah, and so you look at it – Who can they get? Like you said, you named a couple interesting guys. What about a guy like James Starks? I mean, perpetually yeah. injured, but I mean, again, you could, you know, not a bad change of pace type guy. Looking through here, you're not going to get LeGarrette Blount. I mean, Justin Forsett, you're not going to go after because you saw how bad he was when he wasn't in that system.
Yeah. I mean, Adrian Peterson would be perfect. He's not playing backup anywhere.
No, probably not. I mean, likely not. I honestly,
Reggie Bush, who has as many rushing yards as we did last year, as what it was.
Yeah, Travis could or Travaris Cadet's another interesting one that you brought up. So I mean, it's such a bad class. I mean, you don't want to go get a Matt Asiata because you've seen what he's done in Minnesota as a backup. I mean, it's nothing that inspires confidence in any way, shape, or form, right? Like, so yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like the you have to have one. Like you have to have a veteran. I think it's going to be another July signing. I really do.
That's very possible. And
I don't.
Chris Johnson, I think he'd be ideal. Now, we've said before, Kerwin Williams might be the guy. He might be the backup. He
Right.
might have built, but I don't want to count on that. I don't want to
No,
count on that.
you don't want to
And
count
I
on Kerwin Williams and Elijah Penny this year.
and then but they have zero experience in their running back room right now. Like they're losing Ellington, they're losing Stephon Taylor, they're losing Chris Johnson. So they've got,
But they also lost Stump Mitchell, so
that's
it's
true.
you know, so Freddie Kitchens is coaching a position he's never coached before. They need a veteran presence, as you said, in that room. Somebody that's been in meetings, somebody that knows what to, and not that Freddie Kitchens doesn't, but you know, sometimes coming from a quarterback position, watching film to now you're having to watch film as a running back, it's going to be a little bit different. So you look at it and you just kind of shake your head because you don't know where it's going on this roster and this team and where they're going to get that. Rashad Jennings is an interesting one out of New York, getting cut again. You know, he hasn't really done much, but when he went to New York, like he wasn't bad by any means, but he's a guy that has been in a situation where he can be a backup. You know, you look at it last year, he only had 181 attempts. The year before that, 195. He's not a guy that is accustomed to having big numbers of carries, and throughout his career, basically every other year, he puts up a solid season. So maybe that's a guy that they could kick the tires on. But you know, you kind of nailed it. Like they're limited because the best fits, the Darren McFadden, the D'Angelo Williams, those guys are probably just out of their price range for a backup running back, rightfully so, but
What about a guy like Jamaal Charles who was just released? One, would he be available?
I honestly don't. It's the same thing with Adrian Peterson. They're going to want one more chance, right?
And coming to the Cardinals, that's the thing. You already know who Top Dog is. You already know that. You know going in, David Johnson's going to, I mean, the guy who comes up and backs David Johnson up, he's not going to get more than 150 carries all year. Not going to get more than 150 carries on that. That's even generous. He might get 100 carries all season. So you have to find some way else that you're going to be going to make an impact if you're going to find playing time. You've got to be Stephon Taylor in terms of pass blocking and special teams. But again, I want someone who can rush the ball because as much as Kerwin Williams has potential. There's the guy wasn't even on the roster to start the season, and he's made strides, but there's reason why he hasn't been on a roster or getting regular playing time any season, and it's because he's just, you know, there's potential, but there hasn't been production yet outside of the running, which is great, but he doesn't do the other things yet.
Yeah, and but quite honestly, I mean David Johnson's hasn't been bad, but you don't really have a back on your rot. Like David Johnson's a dude all your back, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's not. But they still had Chris Johnson on the roster because of some things he did well that David Johnson didn't. They still had Stephon Taylor on the roster because of some things he did well that others didn't. right? So yeah. Now all of a sudden you have David Johnson. And so hopefully David, you know, fills those holes that he's in his game, because he did have some still. But yeah, can you go from a guy that doesn't do everything great and then a guy that does everything worse than that guy, including the guy's worst stuff? I don't know. That's a tough.
The receiver position's an interesting one, because it's one where there's a bigger need per se, because it's not your backup. They need, as we discussed, someone who can be potentially a starter, or that can kind of bounce between a two and a three, because yes, we got Larry Fitzgerald. They got John Brown. That's the issue. John Brown might be healthy. He might not be. If John Brown is what he was, if he's, you know, only three quarters of what he was two seasons ago, that's not what you want from your number two per se, especially who will be gaining bigger yard plays. And so you don't want to expect John Brown to be a 1,200-yard receiver, a 1,000-yard receiver, and to bank on that with the health history he now has, and J.J. Nelson to have to be your number three. And so you want to find someone. The names I have that I'd like, as some matches, Pierre Garçon, I like the match because he's productive. He shouldn't get top dollar, although in a simulation I saw he did get 4 years at more than $9 million a year. That's going to be pricey. The guy I would love to see, and by reports that are out that the Cardinals have no interest, is Kenny Britt. I love the dynamic he adds, because he's got size and speed. He would be a good – he'd be, you know, a better Michael Floyd. Terrence Williams, but again, a name I ran across as I'm going through some receivers that I could see the Cardinals having interest in is Marcus Wheaton. He was drafted by the Steelers. Arians was already gone, but it was an Arians type guy. He's 5'11", lots of speed. He had some injury issues, so they could probably get him on the cheap. And he does. He's the type of player that could be John Brownish, J.J. Nelsonish, but you could bring him in. And then the last guy I put down, he's never been good as a receiver, really, but he does offer something in that speed, and that's Cordarrelle Patterson. Plus, he's got the return element to it. Cordarrelle Patterson would be, he's gotten 52 passes last year, but, he's really, toss it to him, throw it to him short, don't make him run any routes, and just let him go in speed. Do any of those names intrigue you? My favorite is Kenny Britt, but he's going to be expensive, because he had over 1,000 yards with the Rams and they were dreadful. They were terrible.
Yeah, but it's interesting because Britt's projected to get less money than guys like Pierre Garçon, Michael Floyd, these knuckleheads. And Garçon's not a knucklehead, but it's just crazy that they're going to get that kind of money. Yeah, Garçon's supposed to get $8.7 million. Floyd's market value is $8.6 million. You have a guy, I don't know, maybe like a Brandon LaFell.
Yeah, that's a name I ran across. That could work. But if there's one thing we know about Drew Sirianni, they've got to be fast. They've got to be fast.
Even $6 million a year. Yes. I don't know. Did Brian Quick? No, he didn't get franchised, did he? That's an interesting one. Quick from the LA Rams never really turned it on. Never really matched up to what his draft position was as the first pick of the second round in the 2012 draft. But again, hampered by ineptitude and bad quarterback play, he would be your bigger receiver in that instance. And he's a guy that can fly, from what I remember. I'm going to look up his combine real quick. But I'm pretty sure he's like a 6'2", Oh, he's even taller. Wow. 6'4", 220, and he runs a 4.5. So, you know, he's a big man that can move. So, you know, you look at it, maybe quick is a fit. I don't know. Like, these are tough because you see the fits. Like you said, Garcon, Kenny Britt. But those guys are going to get $7+ million a year. And I don't know if the Cardinals are going to have that type of money to spend. You know, there's the kid out of Baltimore, Kamar Aiken, maybe. I don't know, like, and he's supposed to get $7.5 million. Never mind. My goodness.
The money's crazy right now. This is the thing. Wide
receiver's not going to get paid a lot. Like,
I mean, you look at Tavon Austin, he's got a bad contract, but Tavon Austin's getting $11 million a year. That just tells you about the wide receiver. So I guess they're going to have to hit the lottery somewhere. And maybe that's where, when they signed an Aaron Dobson, he's basically a lesser version of Michael Floyd. Kind of has the same issues. He flashed. He's got drop issues, but he's got size and speed. Maybe they try to hit the lottery like that, or maybe they're going to bank on just guys producing in other areas. I just don't know, because you look at the free agent class and there's guys that fit, but like we talked about before, with the salary cap space they've got,
they have to be very judicious.
Right. They can really, the only splash I see them making is re-signing someone. And that's it. Everything else is going to come out of the bargain basket. It's going to be your Dollar Tree. It's going to be the discount store that they're getting, and they're going to hope they're going to get solid contributions from, but they're not going to make anyone excited.
No, but I mean, honestly, you look at it, good teams that are already constructed well theoretically aren't supposed to make the splash signings. But this is an instance where you're at a crossroads for a team that probably needs to make some signings. And so that's why, you know, they are in this kind of market that they're in. I just, the market is so crazy this year, and the Cardinals are one of the few, you know, they're one of 13 teams. So maybe half the league that isn't financially prepared for it. And that's the interesting / tough position to be in, because they have glaring needs that need to be addressed, but they don't necessarily have the finances to either re-sign players that help with those needs, or, you know, like you said, bring in or compete financially free agent wise to get somebody in here. And so now you're banking on selling people like, oh, you know, we're going to make a run, so come play for us type thing.
Right. At tight end, obviously, I think the very best option in terms of production has got to be Jermaine Gresham. He's been in the system in terms of, you know, Martellus Bennett's a better tight end. But are you going to be – he's going to cost a little bit more, and are you going to get markedly better production?
With Bennett, though, you get a better blocker. Like, you get a better two-way tight end. It's the same argument for O.J. Howard, and you're paying less money, you know, but that's the hard part.
Yeah, a name I was looking through the tight end. So if they don't bring Jermaine Gresham back, and by all reports – Gresham is a guy the Cardinals want to bring back. I don't know if because he took the deal last year for on the cheap, that he's going to go test the market this year. And we're thinking, you know, the Cardinals reportedly are willing to pay him $6 million a year, which is basically what he turned down playing for $3.5 million. I think six is the bottom market for him. Maybe he wants to come back. But I put four names out there as who would be possible replacements, who would fit – schematically and size wise. And Martellus Bennett's the first one. A name that I actually was, you know, I looked at and I was like, oh, he'd be, he doesn't fit the size profile. This is an old guy, Vernon Davis. He's 33 years old. He's a fierce blocker. He's still super athletic, and he still caught 44 passes last year, which is more than Jermaine Gresham caught. Except he's, you know, I don't know if this is kind of a dead set thing they have. The Cardinals have not had on their roster since Bruce Arians took over as coach. They haven't had a tight end on their roster that's shorter than 6'5 or lighter than 260. Davis is 6'3", 250. And I actually think if Gresham doesn't come back, I think this might be the perfect scenario for the Cardinals at the position. Vernon Davis for a year or two and draft O.J. Howard, and you've transitioned perfectly. I think that if you can't get Gresham, I think that's probably as good a scenario as you can get.
Yeah, and there's some interesting names. Oh, go ahead and finish your list, though.
Luke Wilson out of Seattle, not quite the blocker, but definitely can play. He's capable, but he's not in the same category as a Gresham, Bennett, or Davis in terms of blocking, but he definitely could be productive. And then another guy who is, if he's on your team, you love him and hate him, is Jared Cook. We saw him with the Rams, as talented as they come and as frustrating as they come. We saw him with the Rams, but you saw the highlight there with the Packers when he made that catch that I don't know how in the world he did it to keep their drive alive. He fits a size profile. He's a solid blocker, especially when he wants to, but he drops passes. I mean, he's got good hands, but he drops critical passes on third down almost regularly. So he'd be my least favorite of that group. But I think all of those players fit.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I agree with most of them. I wouldn't mind seeing a guy brought in like a where'd he go? I was just looking at him. Red Ellison out of Minnesota. He's more of a blocking tight end, but Minnesota also has an interesting quarterback system going on there. Deion Sims out of Miami is another interesting one. Good blocker. He's been a guy that's been, again, underutilized in his time there, and he's younger. But I don't know, you know, if Gresham wants six and you can get Sims for four or, you know, 3.5, that's the hard part for me. Like, how much more do you go on Gresham? Because I just don't see the value in paying $6 million a year for a position that's only going to catch, what do you have, 39 catches on the season and 2 touchdowns?
I think it was 37, and isn't
a great blocker. Like, that's just my whole thing on this subject.
At the next group, and that basically this will wrap up the offense, would be the interior line. Obviously, a tackle, they're fine, but on the interior line, A.Q. Shipley's a free agent. Evan Mathis retiring. Earl Watford's a free agent. And they really struggled at right guard. They had 5 guys start. And so,
well, and after
almost
Lauren Devaney Taverner, whatever
his, and Waters, Ryan Waters got him. And two, guard's not going to be cheap.
Guard's not going
to be cheap at all.
At all. I don't know where they're going to go. I don't know how they're going to do it. You know, we've talked about it. I think A.Q. Shipley's their first option. Obviously, he's a center, but I think he's their first option because you're probably going to be able to get him. I was thinking like a two-year, $2.5 million deal. They're going to have to give him an increase, don't you think?
I think they'll have to, and it might cost upward to, you know, it might be as much as 2 years, $4 million. Although the simulation I ran on using the over the cap data with this one, Ultimate GM, I didn't re-sign him, and it showed that he got a one-year deal for, I think, $4.5 million. And I don't think he's going to get that much, but, you know, I wouldn't be too surprised. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because they've got – it's almost as if, in my opinion, you need to bring back Shipley, one, and then if you bring back Shipley, then you bring a guard who doesn't necessarily have to be the starter but can be the starter. Otherwise, you are forced to then bring in a really established guard.
Right. And so,
the
Shipley thing we both agree with. I said, if you don't bring in Shipley, there are guys you can get that do similar things to AQ Shipley. For instance, I think you can get a guy out of New Orleans, Tim Lolito, going to be right around the same amount of money, guard center swing guy. I think it would be similar to getting AQ back. And then the other guy is a guy that's bounced around quite a bit, but he's played well wherever he's been. I don't know if it's a personality thing, why he can't stay on a roster, but it's Stefan Wisniewski.
Yes, the Cardinals were reportedly interested in him when he was a free agent after leaving Oakland.
And he went to Jacksonville for 2 years. Yes. Then he was in Philly last year, and he's done a great job everywhere he's gone. So the question becomes, and these are all AQ Shipley type signings. These are guys that you're not going to break the bank for. But they're veterans who've had success in the NFL. As opposed to, like we said, you don't necessarily want to go into this season with Evan Bame as your starting center and John Wetzel or Cole Toner as your right guard. It's not that those guys are bad. It's just you want to be able to – those guys to win the spot, not be given the spot in this instance.
It's kind of like how they handled Bobby Massey back in 2012. You know, he had a solid half year after a bad half year. But, Bruce Arians came in and said, no, Bobby's – he's not going to cut it. And so they brought in Eric Winston. They've been very dedicated in the notion of, okay, we've got this young guy, with the one exception being DJ Humphrey last year. DJ Humphries is the only guy where they said, okay, we've got this young guy who can play here, but we're still going to bring someone in.
Well, allegedly, because they made a run at Bobby Massey late, too. So,
well, apparently they had interest in Andre Smith and Bobby Massey, but yeah. Ultimately, it just came out to be there was no one out there. And this is kind of the case here. At least at center, there's just not really anyone out there. There's really nobody really that is better than Nick Mangold just cut by the Jets. You know, if you see Evan Bame as your future at center, but you're not sure if he's the now, if you don't bring back Shipley, you could bring in a Mangold. Now he's old now. And aside from before 2016, super durable 2016 injury. So you might be bringing back Evan Mathis essentially. But you've got other guys, at least at guard, you actually said one of the guys that I thought was a potential understated addition, that's Tim Lolito. He's not necessarily a good starter because he hasn't been a starter for an entire season yet, but he's versatile. So he's got starter, they bring back Shipley, and then you could have him compete with Lolito, compete with Bame for the right guard spot, or you can give him the left. He hits right guard if Bame wins the starting job, and then you've kind of got some flexibility there. Tim Lolito becomes kind of the Ted Larson guy with a little less starting experience. The other guys I have on the list that I just wrote about today is these are guys that are more wishful thinking. There's Ronald Leary out of Dallas, Kevin Zeitler, Cincinnati. Zeitler's going to get paid. He's considered the top guard on the market. I didn't even bother with a Larry Warford because Warford's good.
They're all going to get over $10 million a year.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. But the one guy that, if they're looking for an Evan Mathis type signing, Jari Evans would be an interesting case study because he's been around in the league forever. In fact, there was a time he was the best guard in the NFL, probably. He left New Orleans. He signed with the Seahawks, but then got cut. Then joined the Saints again and then started all 16 games. You know, depending on his, I mean, they were willing to pay Mathis $6 million last year. It'd be interesting to see if they'd be willing to do the same sort of thing with Jari Evans, because he would be an upgrade at right guard. He'd be a nice veteran presence right there, and it bridges the gap between he and whoever that is who takes over at right guard in the future. Is it Cole Toner? Is it Evan Bame? Is it a guy they draft this year? But, you know, I kind of like that. If he's old, though, but he's durable. So he doesn't come with the same concerns that you had with Evan Mathis a season ago.
Exactly, and that's what you want. This is, again, a complicated situation where this team is in a spot where you have players, you don't know what you have in those players though, and so like you said, you need a veteran in there that can take some pressure off the young guys. It's going to be interesting to watch what happens.
That'll wrap up the offensive side of the ball. Coming up next on, we'll wrap up free agency talking about the defensive side of the ball. That's coming up next. Well, and special teams, that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Rise Up Sea Red is back, and we're talking the defensive side of the ball. We've had some key, basically the main needs is veteran someone on the defensive side, starter at inside linebacker, a starter at cornerback, and a starter at safety, and then on the special teams, probably a kicker. Obviously, they don't have a kicker on the roster, so they're going to need someone. So we'll start with the defensive line. In my opinion, basically it's either Calais Campbell or it's Frosty Rucker, with the hope that Rodney Gunter and Robert Kimdichie and Xavier Williams and Olson Pierre, they can all take a step or two forward so that you don't miss the production, and you bring back Rucker so you don't lose the leadership. After that, I really don't care who they bring in. It could be – it doesn't matter, because the only guy – basically, if they bring in a defensive lineman after Rucker, after Campbell, it's just going to be an old guy who's a leader.
Right, and you saw what Earl Mitchell got. Again, money's going to be stupid around here. a guy like Jared Odrick would fit. maybe a guy like Glenn Dorsey out of San Francisco, but maybe a guy like Tyson Alualu. But again, I mean, those are all guys that are in their late 20s, early 30s. That have been around the block, and you're hoping you can get them kind of at a discounted rate while you again see if Rodney Gunter and Robert Kimdichie are ready to take over everything full time.
A name that I would like to, I wouldn't mind seeing come back, and that's Alan Branch. He'll probably cost too much, and he might just want to go back to New England because he's got himself a pretty good gig there. Super talented.
Everybody wants to go back to New England.
They keep winning. Why not? But Alan Branch would be interesting because he's productive. He's now 32 years old. If you remember way back when, and if I recall, didn't the Cardinals trade up?
Yep, to the top of the second round to draft the big man.
And then he didn't play. Trade with New England?
I think so.
So they traded up to get Branch, and who ends up with Branch? Yeah, New England. And he's turned out to be pretty good because he showed flashes but just didn't have the work ethic here. Seattle played pretty solidly and turned into a really good player in New England. But I still think he's still got a little bit left in the tank, so he's probably going to be cashing in for more than that. Inside linebacker, that's a really, really interesting position because they got Kevin Minter there. I mean, they've got the – It sounds like Kevin Minter's probably on the way out. He wants to test the market and see what's out there. I wouldn't rule out his return, but if you look at the names out there, nothing's impressive outside of Hightower. And he's going to get stupid money. There's just not, in my opinion, is there really anyone out there that's a significant upgrade over Minter?
No, there's not. Maybe a Sean Spence, but he's been injured a lot, and I don't know what he's going to get paid, if we're being completely honest. I think it was like $4.5-5 million a year.
And he doesn't have a track record of starting either.
No. Zach Brown's an interesting one out of Buffalo, but again, he's going to cost too much money. I mean, it's going to be $4.5 million a year. That's what you're going to pay. Like, you're either going to pay Minter $4.5 million a year, or you're going to pay somebody else $4.5 million a year.
And so you could go this other route. You could go CeeLo Moore's going to play two downs. You draft a guy, and maybe they pull the upset, and we don't know how draft boards are going to go. Maybe they draft a linebacker number 13, or maybe they trade back and draft a linebacker, whether that's not going to be Reuben Foster, he'll be long gone, but maybe Hassan Reddick or who's the other guy out of Vanderbilt? I can't remember his name. I'm slipping.
Zach the other Cunningham.
Big, yeah, Zach Cunningham. Those guys are – but then there's other – I mean – there aren't a ton of three down linebackers in the NFL anymore. I mean, Kevin Minter developed into an okay one. But if you can get a two down guy and then rely on your, box safety type guy and pair someone else up. Although we could turn back the clock on one more time. Is Carlos Dansby's on this list somewhere, isn't he?
That would be hilarious.
Yes, he is. 35 years old. He's a free agent again. He could run it. He could run that defense.
So, I mean, I think, honestly, this inside linebacker draft is so deep. If they don't come away with one, then it was a decision they made. Unless, obviously, they re-up somebody for like 4 years. But I don't see anybody on this list worth re-upping for 4 years. I mean, so unless they find a way to spend some money, maybe a guy like like Rolando McClain and take a
who keeps getting suspended.
Right. take another shot on him. I don't know.
I mean, you've got another old guy in DeQuell Jackson. I think at one point the Cardinals had interest in him.
Steven Tulloch, maybe another one.
That's a guy. I mean, he's not
what he was.
But he still can tackle guys, which is, so this is, it's a position where you're like, ooh. And this is where you have to turn to Dayon Buchanan and say, okay, we need a big year out of you because whoever's on this other side, yeah. And maybe CeeLo Moore's the guy. Maybe CeeLo Moore's going to be okay enough because guess what? He's not going to command a lot of money. He was on the – he was cut by a bad defense early in the year and was on the street for, what, weeks? And then the Cardinals picked him up. So he's not going to keep them.
Not out of like, oh, look at this good player is available.
We signed CeeLo Moore. Yeah, he was, people talk about Kevin Minter in coverage. Moore is not even as good as Minter in coverage. So you make him a two down backer and you bring someone else, whether you increase the role of Alani Fua, who, could be that coverage guy, or here's a fun name that's a free agent, Manti Te'o.
No. Manti
Te'o? I mean as a bit player for your coverage linebacker in nickel situations.
Maybe. I mean, he could. I honestly got like Michael Will Hoyt, maybe, because you can get him probably for $2 million a year. Akeem Dent's not bad, but I bet you he's going to try to get a little more, probably double what he got last year, which was 2.5. So it's finding that balance of finding guys that can play, but at the right price.
Now, cornerback. Cornerbacks are expensive.
Yeah, they ain't getting
cornerbacks money. Are really expensive. And guess what? Marcus Cooper, he's not Pro Bowl alternate Marcus Cooper.
Yeah, all of you were bragging about that until he's not signable because he's going to cost too much money.
What do you think he's going to get? Is he going to get $4 or $5 million? He's going to get Justin Bethel money. I bet you'd have to think if Justin Bethel got $5 million a year, isn't Marcus Cooper going to get $5 million a year? And he actually did something at cornerback.
Yeah. I mean, you could take a chance on a guy like a DJ Hayden that never turned out in Oakland.
Prince of Mukamara.
That's going to be like expensive. That's going to be like $10 million a year. Stephon Gilmore supposed to get $14 million a year.
Oh my gosh!
So I mean, money's going to be ridiculous.
So they're probably going to have to go the, you know, Mike Jenkins would have been a good match had he not gotten hurt for the 50,000th time.
Right.
That sort of player. Because ultimately, they still have some talent there. I'm not completely dead on Justin Bethel, especially if he's healthy this offseason.
No, I think maybe Bethel and Williams are fine. That's the thing is, like, it's one of those things. You've invested in the spot.
It's a gamble.
At some point, you either have to crap or get off the pot with these players. Like, you either hit or you miss. That's the reality of the subject.
We've got an old Greg Toler who's now 32 years old.
Wow. He's been in the league forever.
He has. And
good for him.
And that's good, especially since, you know, he looked like he was going to be really good, then got hurt, then looked like he was going to be good, then got hurt. But, you know, you've got some names on here that, you know, Justin Gilbert, high athletic upside, but now he's been cut by
everybody.
Two teams? He's cut by everybody. So he's not a guy you want to look at really necessarily.
I mean,
you're looking at old with experience, or you're looking at injury prone.
Or young upside that never turned out. So that's the, you know, like you said, DJ Hayden, the Justin Gilbert, the maybe the Dwayne Gratz. Out of Philly, but yeah, these guys are. I mean, it's gonna be slim pickings because the Cardinals financially have just some decisions to make. I mean, Prince Mukamura would be a great fit, but
yes,
the NFL really screwed that up last year by letting him go sign a 1-year deal with the Jaguars instead of trying to get him on a 5-year, $40 million deal. Now you're going to pay him, you know, 5 years, $50-plus million. So it's just one of those things. Or maybe that was a decision he made based on the knowledge that he knew this was going to go up and they were going to get more money. So that's the hard part. You know, Sam Shields was toast in Green Bay this year. I don't know if he's got anything left. Nolan Carroll wasn't awful in Philly. He wasn't good, but he wasn't awful. But again, you're talking about vets and trying to wade through if they still have anything left. Like, is it better?
Jordan Powers is on the market again.
But again, he was really good as a slot player.
Yeah.
Not as an outside man corner. And, you know, with Branch and Bethel and Matthew all being best utilized in the slot, how many of those guys can you bring in at this point? And I know you were joking about that, but yeah, it still rings true. Like how many of these guys can you continue to bring in? At some point you either have to hit on one of these corners or, you know, you're going to continue to rotate out corner two like Seattle's been doing since what's the big guy's name? Brandon Browner.
Let him go.
Yeah, they let him go because he went and got a ton of money and then sucked everywhere. So
safety is the other position. And it's not for lack of bodies back there, because obviously you got the Tyrann Mathieu. They've got Tyvon Branch.
Healthy.
But yeah, that's the thing. They need a starter because, you know, they're going to bank on Tyrann Mathieu. They're going to have to because they paid him gazillions of dollars. But Tyvon Branch, do they really want to count on that? And I'd be honestly surprised if he lasts the offseason because of the cap hit, one. And two, he went on IR twice last year when he already had an injury history. A nice addition, but you need someone durable and someone productive. And the bad thing is that they're losing both their productive and durable safeties in DJ Swearinger and Tony Jefferson. They want Jefferson back. He's going to get paid more than they can pay him. DJ Swearinger, by all reports, they're going to let him walk, which
he's apparently there's a locker room concern issue. I don't know if that's true.
And I can understand that. I can kind of understand that, the type of player he's always been.
And that's why he got booted from Houston. I mean, we talked about that before.
Well, and even week one, remember he and Chandler Jones, he got flagged for that, you know, choreographed celebration with Chandler Jones. He joined in the celebration, and you could tell Bruce Arians he had a real short leash with it, because if he did that again, he won't be here, were his words. And Swearinger ended up being really good, and I would like to see him back. But personality-wise and just the knucklehead factor, did he play really well because it was a contract year? And is he going to go back to his knucklehead ways? But, yeah, I'd love to have him back, but I don't work with them, so I don't know what his fit is in the locker room. He is an interesting character, to say the least. But if you don't bring back Swearinger, you don't bring back Jefferson – what do you do?
You got some options in the same price range. You got a Jonathan Cyprian out of Jacksonville.
He was your favorite, wasn't he?
Yeah, I really liked him. He's a guy that's going to get right around $4 to $5 million a year. So if you're going to pay that to Jefferson, I mean, swing it to somebody else. Barry Church is a veteran. He's supposed to get $4 to $5 million a year. So that's another interesting one. The real name that I like is the kid out of LA now, I guess, the Charger safety, Jahleel Adai.
What, you're not going to go with TJ McDonald?
So, you know, and again, a guy that's supposed to be in the $4 to $5 million a year range. So would I prefer a Swearinger? Sure. But it looks like that's not going to happen. You know, interestingly enough, there's a bunch of 25-year-old safeties, and they're all red flag guys. You got Matt Elam, obviously just got busted. Tony Jefferson obviously is going to be a little too much money. Swearinger, we just talked about. So where are you going to bring somebody in? Duran Harmon out of New England had a really solid year. He's a nice safety. It's, again, slim pickings, because I think the safety class is where they could actually make the most headway, so to speak, in this free agent class, because the safety position is so devalued that they could probably get an impact player at a $4 to $5 million a year range.
Bring back Rashad Johnson.
Yep.
Bring back, bring the band back together, get Gerard Powers and Rashad Johnson back for another year and watch them go to the playoffs again and then ship them off. No, in all seriousness, no. Rashad Johnson was done in Arizona. I mean, he's smart, but his body. And I don't know how did Rashad do this year? Was he productive? Was he
bad?
Well, yeah. The other position of interest, when that would definitely be kicker. We've already, I think, in terms of returner, Jeremy Ross, they've kind of filled that role, and they can probably draft a guy. But kicker, Chandler Catanzaro, he's a free agent as of right now. He's not been given his restricted free agent tender, so he might just they might let him walk. They might bring him back, but the names out there aren't exactly, you know. You know, Nick Folk is an interesting name. Steven Hauschka at one time was really good, except there's one minor detail. He's terrible at University of Phoenix Stadium. Greg Zuerlein, Nick Novak, Connor Barth. So these are all guys that have been productive before, but can you count on them any more than you could count on a younger Catanzaro? That's the thing.
No, I think the best one personally would be Nick Folk from the Jets. He just got released.
Yeah.
Phil Dawson is 9,000 years old, but he still can kick. The problem is going to be you're getting, because these guys are such vested vets, they're going to get some money. So can you afford and do you want to pay a kicker that much money? Robbie Gould is another one. That again, he's done it. He's been super successful. Do you really want to pay him that much money?
Well, even on a restricted free agent tender, it's going to cost, like if they decide to protect Catanzaro to keep him around, it's going to cost $1.8 million.
And at that point, if you're not convinced on it, go sign Robbie Gould, right?
Or right.
Go sign, go see what Nick Folk wants. I would rather have Nick Folk at $2 million than be unsure of Catanzaro at 1.8. You get what I'm saying? Like if you trust in Catanzaro, then I'm fine with that. But if you're not going to re-sign him, or you're not even going to set a tender for him, then the 1.8, go get a veteran that's done it and done well. the question I have, are they going to bring in a third punter?
I don't think so. I mean, I mean, I've written about this as saying, they address the punter situation, but we shouldn't feel confident about it. You got Matt Weil, you've got Richie Leone. Neither player has won a starting job, has won a training camp. Matt Weil has bounced around a couple of teams on practice squads. Then the Cardinals picked him up late in the year, and he wasn't good. I mean, he wasn't really markedly better than Drew Butler overall. Richie Leone, great punter in the CFL, but he couldn't crack an NFL roster himself.
Are there different rules for kicking in the CFL?
For punting? I don't think so. I don't think punting's different.
I think it would just translate, but I don't know. I didn't know if they stood further back or closer, or you couldn't rush the punter. I don't know,
but
I've never watched punting in the CFL, if I'm being completely honest.
But I mean,
if I'm ever watching the CFL games, it's usually because it's at the bar I'm at, or it's a specific prospect, and so I'm just watching their plays. I'm not watching what the entire game. So, but yeah, I mean,
at least both Leone and Matt Weil can be a backup kicker, because remember that was one of the reasons why they had Drew Butler.
Can they hold? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Matt Weil had to learn. I'm betting Leone has no idea how to hold because he was a kicker.
Oh, wow. I don't know.
He was a kicker.
So, I go in with if you're unsure of Catanzaro. This isn't saying they should get rid of Catanzaro. If you're unsure of Catanzaro, then go invest in one of these reliable veteran kickers that have hit the market. The reason, and that's what people don't get, is the reason veteran kickers hit the market 99% of the time is just because of cost. The 49ers can't pay Phil Dawson $3.5 million. the New York Giants can't pay Robbie Gould over $1 million. Nick Novak from Houston's making over $1 million. Like Nick Folk from the Jets was making $3 million. It's not that they're not good. It's just that the teams can no longer pay them that premium. So,
yeah. So, I'm glad I'm not a general manager, because I'd rather be the Browns general manager, where they can sign literally all the players.
Everyone.
They just I mean, he's got to convince him to come to Cleveland.
Right.
But in terms of, you're just like, oh, I'll take one of those and three of those guys and all the rest. So just pile them into the cart, and I've got the money. Cardinals, I know, for as close as they believe they are, they have a lot of needs, and they don't have a lot of money. This is going to be, wouldn't you say, Steve Keim's biggest test as a general manager?
Oh, absolutely. This is what's going to define Keim's general managership, if you will, over the next, you know, several years and whatnot. So that'll be what's interesting, is what he does here, because, you know, he's the one that put himself in this semi-financially cash-strapped position. Now he's got to work his way out of it and then also improve a team that was, you know, an under 500 team in 2016.
And that should bring us, that'll wrap it up. No, this was not an hour show. So thank you for bearing with us through the, what's, I think it's about an hour 20 that we went through. This is episode, actually, if we, this is number 150, episode 150 of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We just talked free agency. We will be back again next week. Only next week, it will not be about free agency, because we're gonna have to record on a Wednesday or Tuesday. I can't remember which one we're gonna do it, but we'll do talk combine, because it'll be wrapping up the combine. We can talk about the combine. So Seth will probably do most of the driving on that one, because he's the draft guy, and I'm not the draft guy. And then if there's any early rumors, we'll talk about it. But by the time we'll get the episode up, signings will be happening and money will be changing hands. And so that'll be more focused on the NFL, the prospects at the combine. So wrapping up this episode, this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox from Rather Than Birds and the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. You can find the show almost anywhere you can find podcasts. It's featured on my site, CardsWire, on Seth's site, Revenge of the Birds. It's on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. Also, you can find us on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red, and Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. And, well, guys, go Cardinals. It's time for some free agent stuff and off-season, and go Cardinals.